This is Diana Porter with Book Talk. My guest is Taye Selassie, author of Ghana Must Go. Welcome to our program.
Thank you, Diana.
You describe yourself as an Afropolitan. What does that mean?
Afropolitan, for me, implies a deep and abiding connection to the African continent on the one hand, and a truly global perspective on the other. In 2005, when I was leaving Oxford, I wrote an essay called Bye Bye Babar, or What is an Afropolitan? Really just describing my experience and my cousins and sisters trying to answer the question, where are you from? So it's my mom's Nigerian, my father's Ghanaian, I was born in London, I grew up in the States. It was all a bit long-winded, and I was trying to think of some way to express how deeply connected I am to the countries once my parents come, while at the same time acknowledging some of the tensions inherent in having grown up elsewhere. But even for my cousins, for example, who have grown up in Ghana, they have very cosmopolitan perspectives. And so, hence, Afropolitan. That's how I describe myself.
As you said, you were born in London, raised in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Your dad's from Ghana, mom from Nigeria.
Uh-huh. Simple
thing. They met in Zambia.
That's right.
Give us a little geography lesson about where are those countries in Africa?
Sure. So Ghana and Nigeria are the only two English-speaking countries in West Africa. There's also a tiny little Gambia, but for the most part, Ghana and Nigeria sit amongst a number of Francophone countries, French-speaking countries, in the westernmost part of Africa. Zambia is further south and further to the east. It had, at the time that my mother was a med student and my father a med school professor, a thriving academic culture. And unfortunately, as has happened in a number of African countries, politics and mismanagement, poor governance have gotten in the way. But my father was born in Ghana. My mother was actually born in London, but spent a lot of her childhood in Nigeria. And they meet further south and further east in Lusaka.
Your immediate family, are they as international as...
Well, yeah. My Nigerian Scottish mother lives in Ghana. My Ghanaian father has lived in Saudi Arabia for most of my life. My twin sister is just finishing her residency in Baltimore. We are truly spread out. We have a faction of the family in Stuttgart in Germany. And yeah, we're everywhere. I live in Rome in Italy on top of it all. So truly a global family.
Why do you live in Rome?
Ah, perché no? Why not? It's the short answer and the honest answer, Diana, is because I couldn't find an apartment in Paris. So I was looking and looking and I couldn't find anything. I knew I had to leave New York City, where I lived for 6 years before starting Ghana Must Go, but I couldn't find a flat. And then fortuitously, a friend of a friend offered me a place in Rome. I went intending to stay for 4 weeks and I live there now. I spoke not a word of Italian when I arrived. I knew one person in the city, but I fell head over heels in love with it immediately.
How's your Italian these days?
Adesso, abbastanza bene. I get by.
You
get by, for sure. Certo.
Ghana Must Go is a novel. It opens with the death of Kwegusai.
Mm-hmm.
Who is he, and how did this come about?
Oh, well, the second question is actually easier to answer than the first. How Ghana Must Go came about is probably one of the greatest miracles of my creative life. I was, as I've said, at a yoga retreat in Sweden. I'd written a short story, which I'd shared with Professor Toni Morrison. She liked it, but suggested that I make it longer. And so I was trying, sort of obediently, to extend the sex lives of African girls with no luck. And I mean, it seemed sort of out of nowhere, the entire cast and crew of Ghana Must Go appeared to me as in a dream, except for as in a shower. And I left the yoga retreat because computers were banned, you know, because we're supposed to be there in deep meditation, not checking our iPhones. And I went to Copenhagen with a dear friend and I wrote the first 10 pages of the novel, which are pretty much published here unchanged. Where did this story come from? Where did these people come from? I don't know. I genuinely don't know. But I'm so happy that they chose me as their vehicle. Absolutely. I am honored and delighted.
Tell us about Kwaku.
Kweku. There's a pronunciation guide in the beginning of the novel.
I think I'd remember.
I wonder what they liken it to. They give like a little... Hold on, let me check. They say Kweku as in Quaker. Kweku. Kweku is like 80% of the people in my parents' generation, whom, you know, I call my aunts and uncles. An incredibly intelligent man who happens to have been born into grinding rural poverty. And that tension alone, I think, defines a lot of his life and certainly many of the decisions that he makes. He's bright, he's curious, but he is cut off from the rest of the world per force of his poverty. And so he leaves. He comes to the States on a scholarship, much like the father of Barack Obama, for example, did. And he makes good in the United States. He meets his wife, Fola, who herself has come to the States at the outbreak of the Biafran War in Nigeria. They have four kids. He raises them. They raise them. Well, really, she raises them in the States, indeed. And then things go terribly awry. And I think what Kweku has not done, perhaps until that point, is really create an identity outside of his desire to succeed, outside of his desire to escape his past and create a future. And so when that future is suddenly and unfairly jeopardized, he falls apart. He literally comes apart and is unable to go on, which breaks apart the entire family. And so Kweku is, on the one hand, I think, emblematic of the incredibly gifted and hardworking immigrants that come to this country from West Africa, but also representative only of himself, a man who has given all to one thing, and when that thing is taken away, finds that he doesn't have very much left.
What about the title of the book? What does that refer to?
Two ways to answer that, I think. The first is, I have not the foggiest idea so far. Okay. As when I started this novel, I saved it almost immediately as Ghana Must Go. In fact, I was going to go home, and then my mom said, why don't you use Ghana Must Go, which is a variant on the same theme. And I said, okay. I saved the Microsoft Word document as Ghana Must Go .doc, and I never changed it. At certain points, I thought, perhaps this is too contentious because of the history of the phrase, which I will explain. But in the end, it felt right. It felt like it was the novel's name as well as fundamental to the novel's identity. So the phrase, Ghana Must Go, in 1983, the Nigerian government summarily dismissed close to 2 million Ghanaian immigrants from Nigeria, sending them back to their country. As they left, given 24 hours to leave, the Ghanaians had to pack all of their belongings in plaid plastic bags, which became known as Ghana Must Go bags.
What do you think is the average American's biggest misunderstanding about Africa?
That the poverty experienced on that continent, stunning and heartbreaking though it is somehow endemic to the cultures found on the continent, I think is the biggest misconception that Americans have of the African continent.
What does that do to, what do you think, movies or television, or these are the stories we know?
I say, have you ever seen the poorest parts of a city like Baltimore, for example? I often say, if in Europe, in Asia, in Africa, if every time we saw a visual image of the United States, the entire United States, this massive, beautiful country, if every time we saw an image, a photograph, a video, a movie about the United States, it was from the poorest part of Baltimore, burnt out homes, boarded up windows, crack attics, trash in the streets, if this was just constantly the imagery that was exported to other parts of the world, then we and other parts of the world would have exactly the same misconceptions of the United States, which isn't to say that the poorest parts of Baltimore don't exist. They do, as do the poorest parts of Los Angeles and Boston and New York. But if we only ever saw those images, ever, and obese children, say, and school shootings, that's it. That's all we got. School shootings, obese children, and boarded up buildings. Then we would think that America was a country that could be painted with one tragic brush. And so, of course, I think it's due to the representation. It's not that war, famine, poverty, infant mortality, treatable diseases, running rampant. It's not that these things don't exist on the African continent. It's that they are not the only things that exist, and yet they are the only things that we see.
Well, thank you. My guest is Taye Selassie, author of Ghana Must Go. published by Penguin Press. This is Diana Cordy with Book Talk.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome.